Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly performing arts magazine. I'm your host, David Latulippe. This week we'll hear about a couple of local productions of some classic musicals, Sunday in the Park with George at Foothill Theater, and Fiddler on the Roof, being presented by Youth Musical Theater Center in Berkeley. Rhodessa Jones, the director of Extigone at the African American Shakespeare Company, will talk about playwright Nnamdi Kelly's contemporary urban adaptation of Sophocles' tragic Antigone. Critic at large Peter Robinson will be offering a riff on Valentine's Day before the hour is out. So do stay with us. Some of the most familiar tunes in American musical history from Fiddler on the Roof. That's a show that had its debut some 50 years ago and is being staged now by the Youth Musical Theater Company in Berkeley. Fiddler on the Roof, music by Jerry Bock, lyrics by Sheldon Harnick with a book by Joseph Stein. It's running through March 1st at El Cerrito High School Performing Arts Theater, and a couple of folks involved in the show are with me today on Open Air. Jennifer Bosing is both artistic director of Youth Musical Theater Company and is directing Fiddler on the Roof. She began working professionally as a singer-actor in Minneapolis at the age of 9. She later studied acting in New York City with Sanford Meisner and Richard Pinter, and she earned a master's degree in music from the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, where she received the award for Outstanding Achievement in Operatic Performance. Still performing locally in organizations such as the San Francisco Opera with the San Francisco Opera Center, Gold Coast Chamber Players, the Berkeley Symphony Orchestra, Berkeley Opera, Oakland East Bay Symphony, and many others. It's a pleasure to welcome Jennifer back to our studios.
Thank you very much.
She's joined by Ethan Ostro, who goes to Berkeley High and is doing independent studies there. This is his fourth show with Youth Musical Theater Company, and his tenth show as third as leading role, fourth year with the company. Other shows he's been in include Urinetown, South Pacific, Merrily We Roll Along, Ragtime, and West Side Story. Ethan, welcome to Open Air yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First of all, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. Why aren't you in school?
Well, that's where the independent studies program comes in. It's really awesome. I get to morph my schedule how I want to, so I'm
Perfect.
Lucky enough to get to come here.
Well, there you go. And a little bit of live radio under your belt for the instead of live theater. So how did you first get involved with Youth Musical Theater Company then?
Well, when I was really young, actually, one of the first shows I ever saw was YMTC's first production of Fiddler on the Roof. This was before I was ever interested in theater. But later, a friend told me in seventh grade that I should audition for Merrily We Roll Along, and I had no idea what that show was, no idea what musical theater was, but I just sucked it in and went and auditioned, and I was really nervous, and I ended up getting cast in the ensemble, and now I'm here.
Well, that's a terrific show to start in, and dive into the deep end with Sondheim.
Right.
It's wonderful. Right. Jennifer Bosing, it must be exciting exposing these kids to these classic musical theater moments that you probably have ingrained in your head as I do mine, but seeing a fresh approach to them.
Yes, yes, it's really neat. I mean, Fiddler on the Roof, of course, is a wonderful play, a wonderful story. There's a reason it keeps coming back again and again. It just strikes a very familiar chord with so many people. And it's beautiful music, and there's wonderful dancing. But really, just the art form of musical theater is such a stunning tool for students in the theater because it draws on so many different art forms. And we have students studying with us on all levels of the of the project.
How do you get them initially interested in this? I mean, they see productions that you've been doing at El Cerrito.
Yeah, I mean, we perform all over. We do workshops. We're a year-round company, so we do workshops where it's a non-competitive situation. So students who think they might like to dip their toe in can come do an audition workshop or acting for singers workshop, a dance workshop, things like that. And then we have relationships to some of the schools, but we really have kids coming from all over the Bay Area. A lot of it has been over the years, word of mouth. This is our 10th anniversary season, and we've come to be known something of the company where serious theater students come to study. And then they come and audition. They really want to be a part of it. Oftentimes, because the audition process is competitive, if they don't get into a show, they'll be involved in some other way. So we've just recently started something called TAP, which is the Theater Arts Apprenticeship Program, where students are apprenticing with directors and designers at every level, behind the scene, you know, directing, stage management, costumes, that kind of thing.
That's neat. One of my first exposures to musical theater was when I was in middle school. We used to do a summer musical, and we did How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and Fiddler on the Roof, and just getting exposed to that really hooked me on the whole theater thing. Ethan, are you now hooked? I mean, as the number of shows already you have under your belt.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's like nothing else, being on stage with the lights, having, something like 500 people at the El Cerrito High Theater, for example, looking at you, kind of taking in what you're doing and really being able to tell really incredible stories. I know YMTC chooses very, very touching shows, and it's really wonderful to just get to, again, tell the story. Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, typically how many shows are in a run?
Of one show, we do six. Two weekends, it's not much. Mm-hmm. One of the things that YMTC is really committed to is full live original orchestrations with a full live orchestra.
Fantastic.
Very, very uncommon. Even in professional theater, it's hard to pull that off. So it's something we're so deeply committed to that our resident music director, David Meschler, and I are really in league with in terms of making that happen in whatever way we can. And so it's a priority. And so it's one of the reasons it's hard to do longer runs. Mm-hmm. So it'd be six performances for each show over two weekends, occasionally with a smaller show, maybe a smaller band. We do different kinds of work. We have done longer runs in a small house. But it just depends, and our usual is a two-weekend run at this point.
Ethan, as a veteran of YMTC, I bet you have some stories. for instance, being an actor live on stage, every show is different, of course, and you must be developing your role as you go along, right? So give me an instance where something didn't quite happen the way it should have in one of the shows.
this is one of my favorite stories to tell about sort of improvising on stage. I don't even think I told you this. But during, I think it was our second to last performance of Ragtime, I
should mention, no swearing on the air.
Oh, no. Okay. I was playing essentially a racist fireman, and it was a very, very intense scene where we were confronting the African-American lead in the show, and I got a nosebleed during this long beat that the actors that are talking have. And so I kind of reached into my costume. I turned off my microphone, and on stage, all the actors could just hear me going. So I was just sniffing in through my nose, trying to make it look like I wasn't pleading.
That's a pro. Remembering to shut off his microphone is key to that one.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
Jennifer, this show I mentioned debuted on Broadway 50 years ago, remains one of the most beloved musicals in American history, translated into countless languages, seen by millions around the world, revived six separate times on Broadway since its debut.
Yeah.
This really resonates with people, doesn't it?
It really does.
And this is your second production of it as
that's
well.
That's right, it is. We did one about, 7 years ago. Yeah, as I said at the beginning, I think one of the things about Fiddler on the Roof is, I mean, of course, it's about a people. It's about the violent eviction of the Jews in Eastern Europe at the turn of the early part of the 20th century. Although it was written post-World War II. Mm-hmm. So I think when Stein was looking at there, it's based on the short stories by Shalom Aleichem, the Tevye, the dairyman. Or Tevye and his daughters, but it's but when Stein was writing it, it was post World War II. So there's a lot about it actually that really carries the weight of post world of the Shoah in the book itself. I think in the way that we're looking at a lost world, that time of the shtetls, the small towns that were just completely decimated. But beyond that, I think it also really resonates with all kinds of people throughout history, and even currently, of course, not only is there enormous anti-Semitism going on in the world right now, but also a sense of, you started with the tradition, the song tradition. One of the themes that the actors and the directors have looked at when telling this story in this particular production is the idea of the tension between change and hanging on to what we have as a place to be stable when we're in turmoil or when people are being oppressed, and that the idea of the generational gap and people feeling things aren't stable, and so that push pull and that tension between kind of constant change and upheaval and trying to adapt throughout all of that is really what Fiddler on the Roof is about, and it's really the students have grokked that, have really grasped that, and worked with it in an amazing way. I mean, the cast is amazing. I just have to say,
yeah. You, Ethan, it must be a history lesson in itself, this learning about this play. I understand some of the cast members got to meet a Holocaust survivor.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Yes, Sam Jennerberg actually was a Holocaust survivor and also grew up in a shtetl in Eastern Europe at the early part of the 20th century. So he was really talking about so much that was amazing. Maybe, Ethan, you could say a little about what it was like for you to listen to him.
Oh, yeah. Well, Sam, he grew up in Dubno, which he said was actually very, very close to Onatevka, where Fiddler on the Roof is set. And it was just really amazing to hear about what his life was like, what his everyday life was like, how he would interact with the goyim in his city. I really cannot wait to get a hand on his book that he's written.
Mm-hmm. How did he come to your attention, Jennifer? Sam?
Actually, Sam Jennerberg came and spoke to our cast seven or eight years ago when we did the first production. Mm. He is very dear friends with Rabbi Dean Cortez. They're in the same synagogue, and Dean has been connected to our company for years because his daughter grew up acting in our company, went on to study theater, and actually has come back and is an assistant director on this particular production. So it's something of a small world, but it's actually pretty neat. There's a lot of really nurturing the life cycle of the artist that happens within YMTC community. So Dean, Rabbi Kertes, has been connected to us for years. And so he, and then also our board chair, is also very connected in that community and knows Sam well. And so they both sort of got together and asked Sam if he'd be willing to come talk. He was thrilled to be a part of it. It was really a neat experience, actually, and there was a write-up in Berkeley Side about it. It was quite wonderful.
Very nice. I was under the impression that Onatevka was a fictional place.
Ah, no, there is a town.
There is a town.
Yes.
And also being very timely about, struggle and strife, it's set in Onatevka is in contemporary Ukraine.
Yes, right. That's so, right. It's so relevant. I mean, it's horrifying how relevant it is. Yeah. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the rest of the creative team involved, the cast members or the folks that are making the sets.
Sure. So Eric Flatten, so I mentioned David Meschler. He's our resident music director. And in this particular production, he was our vocal director. He's on a project right now with ACT. So we, the two of us hired Eric Flatten, who's a wonderful conductor and music director, and has come in to work on the show and is amazing and is going to be heading up a 25-piece live orchestra.
Now I remember. I had David was in to talk about South Pacific.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Great.
Yes. And we have our two choreographers, Derek Luskatoff and Pam Crane, who are working on it, doing, a magnificent job. It's a huge show of choreography.
Absolutely.
And then we have a large design team of professional designers, several new designers on this show that just came out of Chico State's theater program that are just wonderful. We've been getting an influx lately of new, young pro designers who are just stunning. And then our orchestra is made up of pros, professional musicians, instrumentalists, and skilled amateurs, and some really amazingly talented students also who do get into the orchestra. And then all the students are a huge, broad array of seventh grade through university. So we have quite a span of age on this particular production. I would say the majority of the students are in high school. Mm-hmm. And they, as I said, they come from all over the Bay Area. And they're just some of the most dedicated and talented young artists I've had the pleasure of working with.
It's terrific. And Ethan, favorite moment of this particular show do you have?
Favorite moment? Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, the writing is so spectacular. There are so many moments that are completely heart-wrenching or very, very fun. I think my favorite moment is probably To Life. I personally really, really enjoy performing that. I enjoy doing the dance. I enjoy singing it. It's a wonderful song. The book is so brilliant. I know Laser and Tevye have a little comedic exchange that's just really, really fun. I'd say that's probably my favorite moment.
Nice. Well, I encourage you to have a fun time doing this for this run. Ethan Ostro, who's playing Tevye, Jennifer Bozing, director of both this musical as well as Youth Musical Theater Company. The shows are at El Cerrito High School Performing Arts Theater. Opens on the 20th and runs through March 1st. More information at ymtcberkeley.org. I would encourage you both to go to the Fresh Air website, because Terry Gross had an interview with Sheldon Harnick. It was really very interesting. So I think you both enjoy that.
Yes.
I wish you a spectacular run, and we will see you again, and I hope to catch the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
A very familiar tune from Fiddler on the Roof will take us out. Still to come here on Open Air, we'll be talking about a contemporary production of Ex-Tigone, plus another musical on par for the hour. Sunday in the Park with George. Peter Robinson will be by with a Valentine's Ode as well. Stay with us.
Oh, Lord, you made many, many poor people. I realize, of course, it's no shame to be poor, but it's no great honor either. So what would have been so terrible if I had a small fortune? If I were a rich man, I have a dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. All day long I dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Oh, yabba dibba 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 dum. If I were a bitty bitty rich idle diddle 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 man, I'd build a big tall house with the rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof and a real wooden floors below. There would be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down, and one more leading nowhere just for show. I'd fill my yard with the chicks and turkeys and geese and ducks for the town to see and hear, squawking just as noisily as they can. And each love the key, with the goo, with the gay, with the ga, will end like a trumpet on the ear, as if to say here lives a wealthy man. Oy. If I were a rich man, the other. were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a bitty rich, idle diddle 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 man, I see my wife, my golden, looking like a rich man's wife with a proper double chin, supervising meals to her heart's delight. I see her putting on airs and strutting like a peacock. Oy, what a happy mood she's in. Screaming at the servants day and night. The most important men in town will come to fawn on me. They will ask me to advise them like a Solomon the wise. If you please, Rebbe Tavia, pardon me, Rebbe Tavia, posing problems that would cross a rabbi's eye. Yadidada, yadidada, da. And it won't make one bit of difference if I answer right or wrong. They think you really know. If I were rich, I'd have the time that I lack to sit in the synagogue and pray, and maybe have a seat by the eastern wall, and I discuss the holy books with the learned men 7 hours every day. And that would be the sweetest thing of all. Oy. If I were a rich man, if I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Lord, who made the lion and the lamb, you decreed I should be what I am. Would it spoil some vast eternal plan if I were a wealthy man?
Great Topol singing If I Were a Rich Man from Fiddler on the Roof, being staged by Youth Musical Theater Company at the El Cerrito High School Performing Arts Theater, a fine cast, and the Tevye Ethan Ostro heading things out. Information at ymtcberkeley.org for information about that production. Still to come, we'll have a production of Sunday in the Park with George to share with you. And next, a play that had its debut not 50 years ago, but oh, some 2,500 years ago. In its original version by Sophocles about the incestuously spawned daughter of Oedipus and his mother, Jocasta, it was probably staged with sandals and robes. The Bay Area is being treated to not one, but two versions of the classic story. On an upcoming open air, we'll hear about the Cutting Balls production of Antigone. And today we're going to hear from the creators of a contemporary adaptation of the story, retitled Extigone. It's being staged by the San Francisco's African American Shakespeare Company. The world premiere of Extigone in this adaptation by Nambi Kelly, directed by Rodessa Jones. Rodessa joins me in studio along with Sherry Young, who is the artistic director and founder of the African American Shakespeare Company. Actress, teacher, singer, and writer Rodessa Jones is co-artistic director of the acclaimed performance company Cultural Odyssey. She's been a keynote speaker for graduation commencement for the Department of Theater, Dance, and Performance Studies at UC Berkeley. She was just recently the 2014 Interdisciplinary Artist in Residence for the College of Letters and Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And beginning in 2015, Rodessa will be a visiting professor at St. Mary's College in Moraga, California. Radessa, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's nice to be here.
She's joined by Sherry Young, who founded the African American Shakespeare Company in 1993 and has been its executive director ever since. She's directed some 16 productions and organized programs at various colleges and universities and conferences across the country. Sherry, thank you for creating the company and welcome to Open Air.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here.
It's
well,
nice.
For those of us who are less than familiar with our Greek mythology, perhaps we could recap the story of Antigone and then talk about how it's been adapted by the company. Who'd like to tackle that one?
I'm pointing at Rodessa. You can't see this over the air.
Rodessa.
Well, I'm just famous for flipping myths on their heads with my Medea project.
Ah, yes. I forgot to mention the Medea project. Please.
Yeah. You know, Antigone, what hits me most is that it's really about feminism and civil disobedience. You know, it's and as we move into the seriously into this 21st century, I think it's so important that we stand up and realize that all life matters, because the original story is and you have to help me with
the original story is Creon is the ruler of the land, and brothers are warring against each other, and Creon decrees that one will have a proper funeral burial while the other one is to fester out in the hot sun. Antigone, the sister of these two warring leaders, she believes full-heartedly that both brothers should have a proper burial. And against Creon's word, she sprinkles dirt on him to represent a burial, and she is sentenced to death. Mm. And that's how the original Sophocles Antigone is. Our version is a little different.
Yeah, it's we have, with Nambi E. Kelly, we're looking at unearthing bodies like they did in Liberia in the name of getting some support around HIV. What's been going on in Africa for a while, bringing the bodies to the parliament and saying, no, you have to do something. So she's unearthing her brother Imem and her brother Nesto in defiance of Marcellus, who is now Marcellus, who is also Creon, but in our play he's Marcellus. And it takes place in Chicago, now, contemporary life, because Chicago is like one of these killing grounds with gangs. And Nambi, I guess, is from Chicago.
She's
lived there and witnessed amazing street violence. And so she took this particular classic, and she has flipped it and having us look at life and death through the eyes of a young woman who says no. You know, her brothers are gunned down at a rally where they pulled it together where they're going to have a gun truce. These two gang members are going to have a gun truce, but in the midst of making that happen, that's a drive-by, and they're both killed. And so all of a sudden we have a purgatory where these two spirits sort of witness everything that goes on down here on the earth. And it's been such an amazing ritual of existence, because talking even today, we had
236 students at a school matinee just an hour ago. And they were really
they got it. They really did. Even the cousins, they were amazed that Antigone and Beau were lovers, because they brought it to our attention that they're really cousins if that's your uncle. And it was just fascinating that, you know, they got this, as well as they really felt for Antigone. They wanted her to live. They were pushing for all this stuff. So it was incredible interaction, and there were just so many contemporary landmarks that they got, you know, as well as the gun violence. And, you know, just you would think about Oakland, you think about, well, even I guess San Francisco isn't so rowdy, but
where the production is taking place in San Francisco is in the Western Edition Hayes Valley,
yes.
And just 2 weeks ago, it's 4 homicide killings in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I know.
So it's very pertinent to nationally, locally, neighborhood, you know, block wise, especially with the young people that are coming to see the show and dignitaries as well.
And last night we decided we were going to have body bags, bodies around the space. And one of the actors, Drew said, you know, I see this every day in Oakland. And I mean, I'm a child of the 60s, and I'm so glad that that has not, like, shattered me. I mean, we all lived through the assassinations and King and, you know, and Kennedy. But it's like to have young people say, well, this happens every day. Or today, the lead actress, Ryan Austin, was saying how she broke up a fight yesterday between three men who were beating this kid up on the sidewalk. And she just felt like, as a part of this ritual that we're all involved in, she said, I had to get involved, you know, just to kind of stop it. So it's been really rich and sort of getting us all to revisit what's really going on, the truth in knowing now, you know, and that's what's so, I'm so glad to be a part of the African Shakespeare's production, because it's my own work with incarcerated women and with women living with HIV and juvenile delinquent girls. And I've traveled a lot in Africa and just all over the place. And then to come home like 20 years later and be asked to direct this classic that has been in the terms of hip hop flipped, you know, and have it be so rich. And, and Tommy Shepard is doing the music. It is a musical in a sense. You know, we have spoken word. We have beats. It's quite rich.
And a full hip-hop score as well.
Yes, yes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Now, Sherry, was this written specifically for African-American Shakespeare Company?
It wasn't written specifically. Nambi E. Kelly and the artistic director, L. Peter Callender, met in Chicago. We focused on the classics, and she was working on this play. And this was about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And we actually slated it to run in 2012. And as in theater, things happen.
Yes, indeed.
You'll probably read about that in my story. All you have to do, how hard could it be? And it wasn't the right time, but we have Redessa here, and this was the perfect time. Redessa, the cast is fabulous. Young people,
yes.
As young as 9 years old, is working like professional adult actors, and rich jewels. Michael Wayne Turner, Tavia Persia, Drew Watkins, Ryan, Nicole,
Austin, yeah.
Peters. Yeah. So,
yes.
So it's wonderful, wonderful. And they're all banding together. It's more than just theater. It's a community coming together to present this. And the dialogue that happened at the school matinee was just outstanding, outstanding.
I understand you're also partnering with some of the people at the San Francisco Hall of Justice.
Yes, yes. We wanted a deeper partner engagement for transitional age youth to be in the show itself. That was the original concept. But it didn't work out as deeply as we had liked to have worked with them. But they're still involved, and they're coming to opening night. They're bringing their constituents to it to have dialogue with us. I'm speaking to them about coming and joining us for our other school matinees for talkbacks with the schools that are coming. And that's our school matinees, they're all free. We don't charge the schools anything. Well, we don't charge public schools anything.
Very good. So this was written by a woman. It's being directed by a woman and is starring a woman in an adaptation of this 2,500-year-old play where the main protagonist is a woman. Was all this intentional, the feminine aspect of the show?
Well, you know, Peter, this is our 20th anniversary. This is African American Shakespeare Company's 20th anniversary. And the artistic director, L. Peter Callender, he said that he was dedicating this season to me for starting the organization. So he has this particular production, but the whole season is directed by all women. And he said that Extigone, he said it's kind of like me. I fight for truth and justice. I can't tell you how many places I've been tossed out of or not a part of. I was commissioner. You know, I went to American Conservatory of Theater, and you know, I've said things that, you know, shook people up and got in trouble for. But not to any. I would do it all over again, because things have to be said, and the truth has to outlast. And what's done in the dark will soon come to light.
The truth must be unearthed.
It
is in the play.
And it's so wonderful that you're using such a classic work to bring it into a contemporary focus this way.
And it's wonderful too. I was just thinking, as you were listing who is who in this production, all of the, there are children, and they're all males. And, you know, and then we go back to look at the gun violence in inner city. And, of course, mothers and daughters do suffer. We're screaming on the ground, but it's the sons that we have to watch die mm-hmm. like this. And it's amazing to have, like, what, we got four or five children, and they're yeah. all males, either in the show or running amok in the theater during rehearsals. And it's a lot of fun.
That's yes. Rhodessa Jones. She's directing Extigone by Nnamdi Kelly, based on the Sophocles tragedy, the world premiere of which is happening at the San Francisco African American Shakespeare Company. Performances run through the 8th of March. Opens on Valentine's Day, 14th. It's at the Burial Clay Theater, African American Art and Culture Complex on Fulton Street here in San Francisco. Rhodessa, I'd like you to talk for just a moment about what you've been doing with the Medea Project, Theater for Incarcerated Women, which is a performance workshop that you're working with.
Well, you know, we are celebrating our 25th anniversary, and we'll be presenting another piece at Brava, and it's Birthright. We're in collaboration with Planned Parenthood, and the Creative Work Fund has been very supportive. So we're doing a piece that's rooted in a conversation about a woman's right to choose, of course, but also a woman's right to decide what is the best kind of health care that she can name and support for herself. And my cast is made up of ex-offenders, local artists, social workers, and we have an ongoing relationship with a UC medical center, so we're dealing with women with HIV. So this makes up the group that will be discussing this, and we're going to be going over to the Omega Boys Club and having an evening of discussing a woman's rights, her body, with young men. We hope that you know, we're going to be at Planned Parenthood on Valencia Street having another focus group, but it's all to gather material that looks at a woman's right to choose and a woman deciding about the best health care for her in the 21st century, you know, given what's happening in Washington. Of course, we're pushing against all of that, too. Yeah. Well, so that's the Medea Project's Birthright, and it opens April 9th at Brava.
Well, thank you so much for talking and for doing that wonderful work that you're doing with them. Rhodessa Jones, again, director of Extigone at African American Shakespeare Company, and Sherry Young, keep up your wonderful work with the company as well. We look forward to hearing more.
Thank you.
Keep getting thrown out of places.
I know.
The production runs through March 8th. Information at AfricanAmericanShakes.org, AfricanAmericanShakes.org, for this contemporary adaptation of Antigone called Extigone by Nnamdi Kelly. Well, from the urban battlefield, we go to a park in the island of the Grand Jatte.
I mean, I don't understand completely.
I'm not surprised.
But he combines all these different trends.
I'm not surprised.
You can't divide our today into categories neatly.
Oh.
What matters is the means, not the ends.
I'm not surprised.
That is the state of the art, my dear. That is the state of the art.
Was.
I like the images.
Some.
Come on, you had your moment, now it's George's turn.
It's George's turn, I
Do
wasn't
talking.
Do you
think he's original?
Well,
yes.
But is it really new?
Well, no.
It's more
than novelty. Well, yes.
It's just emotion, but
then that
is
the
state
of the art, isn't it? Well.
Art isn't easy.
Even when you've amassed it. Fighting for prizes.
Suddenly, you're past it.
All compromises. And then when it's allegorical,
art is easy,
any way you look at it.
Art is not easy any way you look at it, as we're soon discovering here on this particular episode of Open Air. I'm joined now by Melissa Carey, who is involved with the directing Sunday in the Park with George, Stephen Sondheim's 1985 award-winning musical being staged at Foothill College, directed by Melissa Carey. Melissa joined the Foothill faculty in 2003 and teaches both in the theater and music departments. She's an award-winning Bay Area actress, performing leading roles with many Bay Area theater companies, including TheaterWorks, San Jose Rep, San Francisco Playhouse, American Musical Theater of San Jose. As she was also in the cast of the 25th anniversary Broadway national tour of Evita under the direction of Hal Prince. Some stories to tell about that, I'm sure. Melissa Carey, welcome to Open Air.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So Sunday in the Park with George, what a fun, fun show.
It is a remarkable piece of musical theater. Pulitzer Prize winning. Complex, as all those Sondheim musicals are. You know, he was the bad boy of concept musicals in the 80s. And now, of course, he's just sort of our revered master when we are looking at these and with a couple of decades. Eyesights, it's great. And this one, the genesis, was about the painter Seurat, who was a pointillist and complex painting. And he and James Lapine were looking at this beautiful, wonderful painting that hangs in Chicago. And they noticed that there's all these figures out there in the Grand Jatte, and none of them are looking at each other. And they thought, well, that's an interesting story. Who are all these people, and how are they all in this park at the same time? And then Lapine is famously noted for having said, there's somebody missing, and that's the artist. So then they created this piece, which is really about the journey of making art. And then they made it even more complex by putting 100 years between the acts. So Act 1 is based on George Seurat, and Act 2 is based on his great-grandson, a conceptual artist also named George.
Also having a problem with the state of the art.
Struggling to figure it out, yeah.
Lots of commentaries from these peripheral figures in the famous Seurat painting that go on throughout the musical.
Right. So there's social commentary. There's class references. One of the characters is a well-to-do painter who's coming down on George. Seurat, endured a lot of criticism for his work early on. And he died really young, so none of his work was sold in his lifetime. So definitely a tragic character. Another beautiful Sondheim complexity is while the art is pointillistic, so is the score. So the score itself, the musical score itself, is very, it's almost minimalistic, I guess, in places. And vocally, oh my, challenging. It's a delightful piece.
Well, let's talk about your cast.
We're very lucky down at Foothill Musical Theater that we have a great reputation. And then when you do a show that actors really, really, really want to do, you're blessed as a director because a lot of fabulous people show up. So we have a tremendous cast that comes from really throughout the Bay Area because you have to cast each of the characters in the painting. They're a very specific type.
Right.
And then, of course, there's George. We have two Georges in our production because it's such a massive role that we want to make sure we had great coverage on it. Then, of course, there's Dot, who plays Dot in Act 1.
I love the fact that she's named Dot. That's just too cute for words,
it's
Lapine.
Too cute for words.
They probably thought of that and said, oh, leave it in.
Yeah. Huh.
Really?
Let's do that. And then she becomes his grandmother. Becomes her grandmother in Act 2. So another fun thing for the audience on the show is that all the figures in the painting become different people in Act 2. So it's the same group of actors crossing this sort of time travel storytelling.
And the music, the pit that you have involved, full pit orchestra?
For us, this is going up in our 140-seat theater. So for us, we've got seven in the pit. As you could tell from the track you just played and the one we're going to hear a little bit of, there's a very prominent French horn, which figures beautifully in the painting as well. So we've got strings, horn, we've got a nice reed section, and then keyboard. And our conductor is the really tremendous Dolores Duran-Chavallo, who works all over the Bay Area, including the national tour pits. So she's aces.
Well, to give people a little taste of this, let's go out with the opening of Sunday in the Park.
Wonderful.
With George. Melissa Carey, I wish you a wonderful run. The run is starting at February 19th through March 8th up at the Loman Theater at Foothill College. Information at foothillmusicals.com. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
White. A blank page or canvas? The challenge, bring order to the whole. Through design, composition, tension, balance, light, and harmony.
Bernadette Peters as Dot in Sunday in the Park with George. Mandy Patinkin in that original soundtrack. Again, Sunday in the Park with George is being staged at the Lohman Theater, Foothill College, through the 8th of March. Information at foothillmusicals.com. Love, love, love is indeed in the air for our final segment today of Open Air. Peter Robinson returns with an ode to Valentine's Day. Welcome back, Peter.
Good, David. Good to be here. And yes, the Beatles kind of put it together in that simple lyric, "All you need is love." And I think anywhere as you wander around bookstores, card shops, you can't miss the fact that the 14th is St. Valentine's Day. In fact, I was sitting at a coffee table in Barnes & Noble's last week, and I couldn't help noticing two delectable young ladies fondling a book on the art of kissing. Now, I'm not a stalker, but as they were talking loudly and laughing, I heard one say to her friend, and this is a quote, "I used to kiss him on the lips, but now it's all over." And I was intrigued. Did you kiss him on the lips? Or was it all over? Are you finished? But no sooner had I gone into my thoughts when I suddenly heard a commotion of a young man returning a book to the front desk at the Barnes & Noble store. And that book happened to be The Art of Kissing. He explained, "I did what it said on page 8 and got my face slapped." The manager, who gave a wry smile, said, "You should have started on the next page," which I think is what Oscar Wilde might have said. Well, this got me thinking about the old song, "A kiss on the lips is quite continental," but what does St. Valentine's Day really mean now? And both as a cynic and as a romantic, different thoughts kick in. The romantic immediately thinks of those words of songwriter Gus Kahn, "Another bride, another June, another sunny honeymoon, another season, another reason for making whoopee." But I wonder how the early Christian martyr, St. Valentine, whose feast day we celebrate, feels about this. Because in pagan times, in England, St. Valentine's Day was the day that the birds mate. But for the non-feathered variety, here it simply means something different. A trance of lovers, a hush of hopes, a rush of feelings, a blush of encounters, a flush of cheeks, a crush of hugs, a mush of love, a hush of hopes, and no doubt a slush of passion. It all begins with a fever of infatuations, maybe a peck on the cheek, and somewhere in this mix, Valentine Day involves offering flowers. Although, just for your information, you can do it by internet, and it's cheaper than the real thing. But soon things begin to change, and we move into a split of Dutch treats, followed by the chill of commitments, Then comes the tempest of broken promises, and even a winter of farewells, which may end up in a springtime of reconciliations. By February the 15th, the world takes on a shape and form where we return to a state of normality, individuals who simply care for each other. A kiss simply goes to prove that two heads are better than one. And, as Ingrid Bergman says, a kiss can sometimes stop speech when words are superfluous. Mae West, on the other hand, felt love conquers all things except poverty and toothache. Whereas the philosophical poet W.H. Auden got much more deeper into the question and wanted to know, where does love come from? Does it come, or will it come, without warning, just as I'm picking my nose? Will it knock on my door in the morning or tread in the bus on my toes? Will it come like a change in the weather? Will its greetings be courteous or rough? Will it alter my life altogether? Oh, tell me the truth about love. And then I concluded, if it is a rare thing to rephrase Descartes, I think, therefore I'm simple. Therefore I'm single. So, to all those happy Valentines out there, here are some suggestions about events happening in the Bay Area that may give you a moment of thought and an idea as to where you could go. Hornblower Yachts, for example, has a special cruise across the bay. So imagine dinner in the moonlight as the boat chugs out from the ferry building and takes you on a magical mystery tour. For music lovers at Davis Hall, Mozart for Valentine's Day could certainly get you thinking about the wonders of Mozart, his life, and how up and down things went, despite the serenity of much of his music. If you're a theatre goer, let me recommend the Maskers Theatre, a small theatre at Point Richmond, where they're running a play called Here Goes the Bride. It stars Norman MacLeod, and just opposite is the Mac Hotel if you want to have a celebration dinner before heading into the theatre. Tonight, Thursday night, at the Vogue Theatre in San Francisco on Sacramento Street, is the opening of the Mostly British Film Festival. And tomorrow night is the special Film Noir evening. Now, Film Noir may be a strange choice to take your Valentine date to, but the opening movie, I, Anna, starring Charlotte Rampling and Gabriel Byrne, is the story of a mid-50-year-old who goes on a speed dating trip and then suddenly her life unfolds. So that is the British Film Festival, the Mostly British Film Festival at the Vogue Theatre, and Film Noir evening is tomorrow night. Now, if you're in for a trip, the Napa Wine Train, that means a journey up to Napa, has a special Valentine dinner with strolling musicians, sparkling wine, and, of course, lots of dark chocolate. So there's another way you could spend the evening, a special evening, driving up to Napa, hopping on the train, and enjoying the togetherness over a sip of sparkling wine and listening to the music. At the Exploratorium, they have a special romantic tour. And you may think this is a strange place to go, but they have specially put together a collection that will get you, and let's get it right, in the mood for love. If you're a dancer, Tango Forever is performing. Check them out on tango.com, where, again, you can put your lively feet to action, step across the ballroom floor, and change from being Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers into some wonderful moment when you're in the middle of Buenos Aires in Argentina. And then, for those who like to dress to impress, let me suggest the Eternity Ball. It's at Fort Mason. It's a black and white black tie dress affair, but ladies are invited to wear a ballroom dress. So that's music, more dancing, desserts, dinner, Fort Mason, the Eternity Ball. Now, those are just some of the ramblings that you may want to enjoy. But as I say, for some people, it could be curling up in bed, reading a poem, look into the eyes of the loved one, and then taking a deep breath and saying, thank God that's over. So for the rest of us, happy Valentine out there. Enjoy the city. Enjoy San Francisco. And let's hear what Nat King Cole finally had to say about the magic word, love.
Well, we do have Nat King Cole, but I prefer the Michael Bublé version. We're going to hear Michael Bublé sing that classic tune, L-O-V-E. Sending this out to my own funny Valentine of some 28 years, Ron Seeley.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore can love. It's all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can't make it. Take my heart, but please don't break it. Love was made for me and you. Cause love was made for me and you. I said love was made for me and you. You know that love was made for me and you.
Michael Bublé singing the tune that was more familiar to listeners of Nat King Cole than anyone else, L-O-V-E, sending that out to all the lovers or those who choose to remain single this Valentine's Day. How's that for equal opportunity announcing? I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air, our weekly magazine of the performing arts. Next week, I'll be talking with Andrew Nance, who's featured in the new Conservatory Theater production of Harbor. Also, Nicole Paymont will be in to talk about Jake Heggie's work, Dead Man Walking. I'll talk with Jake as well about that amazing work. More guests in addition. You can learn more at our website, kalw.org, where this show is posted, as well as all of our past shows. My thanks to Niels Swinkels, and happy Valentine's Day, Niels, for helping grease the wheels of Open Air week after week. Much obliged. And to all, a very happy Valentine's Day. See you next week.